I want to start this deep dive with a quote that, honestly, it gave me a bit of a shiver when I first read it.
Oh, yeah. Lay it on me.
It's from the source material we're breaking down today. It says, "You think you are building a legacy. The city thinks you are a nuisance. The CRA thinks you are a target."
Oof. Wow. That is stark.
Isn't it?
But it cuts right through all the noise, doesn't it? It just, completely dispels that whole HGTV fantasy.
That you're just picking out backsplash tiles and knocking down a wall.
Exactly. And then counting your money.
Yeah. So today we're diving into a document called the NBLM specification, which, by the way, stands for No Bullshit Missing Middle.
Love that name.
And the source material is, it's fascinating. It's basically a collection of forensic files from a developer, Parlo Stardino, and his company, VULPI.
And the whole premise is that the housing crisis isn't just about a shortage.
No, it's a trap for the unprepared.
That's the key theme right there. We are not looking at some glossy marketing brochure. This is an autopsy.
An autopsy. And Nardini says he spent $5 million.
Which he calls tuition.
Right. Tuition. Learning how not to build in a city like Toronto.
That's what's so interesting. Most companies would hide a $5 million loss. They'd bury it.
Oh, absolutely. Fire the CFO or something.
But he's putting it front and center. He's saying, look, this money was lost to shoring disasters, to redesigns, to delays.
All the stuff that actually happened.
All the real stuff. And he's sharing it so that Joe and Maria, the typical homeowners, they don't have to lose their retirement funds learning those same lessons.
So that's the mission for this deep dive. We're going to look at that horror story, the autopsy, and then pivot to what they call industrial salvation.
But you have to look at the wreckage first. You have to respect the trap.
If you don't respect the trap, you can't find the escape route.
Precisely.
Okay, so let's talk about the victim here. We keep saying Joe and Maria. Who are they really?
So Joe and Maria, they're the archetype,
Right.
right? They're that couple. Maybe they live in Toronto, maybe Vancouver. Lived in a good street for 30 years.
So on paper, they're sitting on a gold mine.
On paper, they're millionaires. Their little detached house is worth a fortune.
But in reality,
In reality, they are completely cash poor. They're dipping into savings just to pay property taxes.
worried about a leaky roof they can't afford to fix.
Exactly. Asset rich, liquidity starved.
And the whole industry, from the government on down, is telling them, unlock your equity, build a fourplex, become a developer.
And the source material argues that this advice is basically handing them a loaded gun.
I think the line was, it's like asking them to rebuild a car engine in their driveway.
For commuting to work in that same car. Yeah.
It's technically possible, I guess.
But the probability of catastrophic failure is just massive. Because they're not in a fair fight. They're up against the villain.
And the villain isn't one person, right? It's not some guy at City Hall with a mustache.
No, and that's what makes it so much harder to beat. The villain is institutional incoherence.
Incoherence. I like that term.
It's a system where the rules literally change mid-step. You have the city saying, we want housing, but then you have individual planners who operate based on comfort.
Comfort. That
Yes.
word came up so many times in the files. We're not comfortable with this. Is that a legal term? I don't remember seeing that in the building code.
It is definitely not in the code, and that's the whole problem. Comfort isn't a law, it's a feeling. It's risk aversion.
So the fate of your multi-million-dollar project comes down to how a planner feels that week.
You're walking through a minefield.
Okay, let's get into the evidence. Exhibit A, 12 Batavia. This story, I mean, I honestly made my head spin.
Yeah, 12 Batavia is the perfect example of the 477 permit nightmare.
Wait, back up. 477. 477 bureaucratic entries.
Yep.
For what? A skyscraper.
For one small residential missing middle project.
That is just insane. Who can manage that?
A professional team can. But Joe and Maria, no way. And think about the financial horror of that. VLPI had $4 million of unencumbered cash.
And that's not borrowed money, that's their own cash.
Hard cash. Just sitting there, idle, for 25 months.
2 years of dead money, just poof, evaporating with inflation.
All because the city was debating whether they felt comfortable with a project that was, by the way, already fully code compliant.
They weren't breaking any rules.
Not a single one. The city just couldn't make up its mind.
But that's not even the scariest part of the story. For me, it was the CRA ambush.
Ah, yeah.
Because you think, okay, the city is slow, but the federal government, they want housing, right?
You would think. But this is where it goes from like bureaucratic horror to straight up financial horror.
Yeah.
While the project is stuck in the city's permit purgatory, the CRA steps in.
And they send a 15-day legal warning.
A 15-day warning. It is a nuclear option. They were threatening to seize assets.
And they tried to claw back what, like almost $500,000?
Over $440,000 in HST incentives.
But why? What was the reason?
The justification was the delay itself. The CRA's logic was, you weren't building fast enough, so you must be a land speculator, not a builder.
But the delays were caused by the city.
Exactly. The maxim in the source material is chilling. It says, they will come for your bank account before the paint is dry.
Wow. It's a war on two fronts. You're fighting the city just to let you build, and then fighting the tax man who punishes you for the city's delays.
It's a perfect catch-22. And if you're Joe and Maria, that 15-day letter doesn't just stress you out.
It bankrupts you.
It bankrupts you. That's where the $5 million in tuition comes in. VULP on survived. Joe and Maria would have lost the house.
Okay, let's move to Exhibit B50 Castleton. This one is really visual. The documents show this rotting interior. It looks like something out of a horror movie.
It does. And the first thing you think is, oh, the greedy developer just let it rot.
Right, the classic absentee landlord narrative.
But the forensic file shows the complete opposite. The house didn't rot because of neglect. It rotted because, and this is a quote, permission took longer than wood can survive.
That is such a profound statement. Permission took longer than wood can survive.
They were just trapped. They couldn't repair it because they were waiting for permits to rebuild it, but the permits dragged on for years.
Yeah.
So you get this manufactured blight. The city literally creates the eyesore it's complaining about.
And then Exhibit C, 21 Batavia, the laneway fiction. This feels like a weird geometry problem.
It is.
Yeah.
So the city has these laneway suite rules and everyone's excited about them.
Supposedly, yeah.
But the planners are terrified of setting a precedent. So they force you to build these huge multi-bedroom homes as a single unit.
So you get these massive, awkward buildings that are less efficient just to satisfy the optics so it doesn't look like an apartment building.
You got it. They're forcing primary density into these weird, awkward shapes. It's architecture by cowardice.
Okay, so the horror is well established. The system's incoherent. The risks are fatal for civilians. And the delays are literally rotting the wood. It feels pretty hopeless.
If you play by the old rules, it is.
So let's pivot. How do we get to the industrial salvation?
The pivot starts with Giardino's core argument, which is you cannot solve a logistics problem with a construction solution.
Break that down for me. What does that mean?
It means we're all trying to fix a fundamentally broken supply chain by just swinging hammers harder and faster. It doesn't work. The real solution is to stop fighting the city on every single project and to industrialize the whole process.
When I hear industrialized construction, my mind immediately goes to modular, you know, prefab boxes, shipping containers.
And that's what everyone thinks. But the source material does a complete modular takedown. It just rips that idea apart.
Really? I thought modular was the future. Why doesn't it work in a city like Toronto?
Two big reasons. Physics and economics. First, physics. You ever tried to get a giant crane down a tight old city street?
With the overhead hydro wires and parked cars and streetcars? Yeah, it's a nightmare.
It's a nightmare. You physically can't swing a massive box into 90% of these lots. But the economic argument is even stronger. Giardino says modular ships air.
Ships air.
Think about it. When you put a finished room on a truck, 90% of the volume of that room is just empty space. You're paying thousands in freight costs to ship oxygen.
That actually makes perfect sense. I never thought of it that way. You're paying for the volume, not just the materials.
VULPI's argument is we ship density, not empty boxes. They ship a kit of parts. And that brings us to the Silk Road Advantage.
This is the part that sounded like an international spy thriller to me. They bypass the Canadian market entirely and go to the Republic of Georgia.
To Tbilisi, Georgia. Yep.
Why Georgia? I mean, why not China or Germany? Mm. And is that supply chain even reliable?
Sort of the Goldilocks zone. Germany has the quality, but it's way too expensive. China has the price, but quality and shipping can be, you know, volatile. Georgia has this unique mix of highly skilled labor and European standards, but at a much lower cost base.
And the alternative is the Canadian market, which the text describes as.
As murder, yeah. It's slow, it's overpriced, and the quality is often mediocre.
They mentioned window lead times. 16 weeks.
16 weeks for Tier B vinyl windows, the kind that warp. By going to the source in Georgia, they get Tier A European aluminum, the good stuff. Tilt and turn, triple glazed.
For the same price.
For the price of cheap vinyl. And the speed. Mm. 2 weeks to manufacture, 4 weeks to ship, 6 weeks total.
So luxury product, half the time, same price. That is a massive advantage when you're fighting the clock on a construction loan.
It's the difference between making a profit and going bankrupt.
But how do they manage the complexity? Doesn't every house need different windows?
This is my favorite part, the window algorithm. They basically treat windows like software code.
Windows as code? What does that even mean?
So instead of custom ordering every single window for every single project, they standardized everything down to just three sizes.
Three sizes. 2 foot, 3 foot, and 4 foot. That sounds really limiting.
You'd think so, right? But here's the math. By using a system of stacking and connecting frames, from just those three variables, they can generate 884,736 compliant combinations.
Wait, what? Over 800,000 combinations from three window sizes.
It's exponential. It's like Legos. You have a few basic brick types, but you can build anything. You don't need a custom brick for every single corner of the castle.
So they turned windows into a standardized off-the-shelf product.
Exactly. No more re-engineering costs, no custom fees. And if a window breaks 5 years later, you pull a standard unit off the shelf. That's real industrialization.
It's taking the chaos of a construction site and giving it the predictability of an assembly line. Okay, so let's see the execution. We talked about 50 Castleton, the rotting house. It has a happy ending, right?
It does. It's the ESG triumph. That rotting house was redeemed and turned into an environmental superstar.
The numbers were pretty amazing. An EnerGuide rating of 27 gigajoules per year. For context, what's a standard new build?
A standard new home, built to come today, uses about 132 gigajoules per year.
So 132 down to 27.
Correct. So this rotting house is now performing almost five times better than a brand new home. It's almost net zero.
And the key takeaway for Joe and Maria is that they could never have done this on their own.
Never in a million years. You can't source triple glazed windows from Georgia and engineer a net zero envelope while you're also fighting City Hall for 3 years. It's impossible.
Yeah. So let's talk about the unicorn, Five Knight Street. This is where the machine finally held.
Five Knight Street is the victory lap. It's a sixplex plus a garden suite, seven units. But the real win wasn't the building. It was the maneuver with the development charges.
Ah, DCs. The fees the city charges you just for the privilege of building.
And they can be hundreds of thousands of dollars. The city tried to trap them here, applying massive DCs even though there were exemptions available. An amateur would have just paid.
So what did VOLPIN do? This is the heist movie part.
It's better. It's resequencing. It's 4D chess. They knew if they applied for everything at once, the city would categorize it the expensive way.
So what was step one?
Step one, get the sixplex permit first. Just the main building.
Okay.
That locked in its no DC status. Once that permit was issued, signed, sealed, delivered. Then they layered the garden suite permit on top.
So they split the application to force the city to apply its own rules correctly.
They used the bureaucracy's own rigidity against itself. That was a $650,000 chess move. $0 in development charges.
That's just incredible. And the timeline?
Construction starts Q1 2026. Occupancy by Q4 2026. Before Christmas. A seven-unit complex built in under a year in Toronto with zero DCs. That's what winning the war so you can keep the peace looks like.
It just highlights the difference between trying hard and having a system. Joe and Maria can try hard. They don't know how to resequence permits.
And that brings us right back to the choice facing you, the listener. If you're Joe and Maria, you're at a fork in the road.
On one side, you've got the DIY path,
which is the 12 Batavia path. It's 477 permit entries, the CRA auditing you, your cash sitting dead for 2 years. It's the trap.
And the other side.
The other side is the industrial partner path. It's Five Knight Street. It's speed. It's savings. It's getting those triple glazed windows from the Silk Road for a fraction of the price.
At the end of the day, it's about risk, isn't it?
It is entirely about risk.
Yeah.
And the source material says it perfectly. We didn't do that because we are lucky. We did it because we spent $5 million learning exactly how the city tries to kill you.
That tuition has been paid.
It's been paid in blood, basically. Someone else took the scars. The only question for you is, why would you volunteer to pay that tuition all over again?
That's a powerful way to frame it. Don't be the student who fails the class.
Just copy the notes from the student who already aced it.
Let's wrap this up. We've gone from the horror of the CRA to the logic of the window algorithm. What's the final thought you want to leave people with?
I want them to think about that phrase, industrial salvation. It sounds technical, almost cold, but real estate is usually treated as a craft, you know? My home is my castle.
We romance the idea of the custom build.
But when you're dealing with a housing crisis, a hostile bureaucracy, and crushing interest rates, craft is not enough. You need industry. You need a machine.
A machine that can eat the friction.
Exactly. The system is designed to eat amateurs. It has an appetite for your equity. You can try to be the hero, or you can just be the beneficiary of the system that already defeated the villain.
Don't be the tuition. Be the beneficiary. I think that's the perfect place to leave it. This has been a fascinating look into the gears most of us never get to see.
A warning label and a treasure map, all in one.
Absolutely. Thanks for unpacking all this with me.
My pleasure.
And thank you for listening to this deep dive. We'll catch you on the next one.